And welcome to AFL Tonight. This is ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I'm Tim Capper, along with my co-host Grizzly Adams, Jim Robinson.
Oh, man. Can't believe you did that. We finally meet in person, and that's the intro I get.
What else do you want me to say? Well, I was going to call you my ZZ Top bandmate. Remember, I told you I was going to do that one.
It's fair. Before we get started, Tim.
Yes.
I would like to put a highlight out to the people listening. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure most people are aware of the tragedy that occurred in Orlando
Yes. This
past weekend.
Yes.
And make it aware that the need that city has right now, whether it's donating blood or funds going to help the people who were injured or the families from those who lost their lives at the Pulse Net. And a lot of things that are going on, not just around this area in Florida, but nationally and support the people that lost their lives, loved ones that are mourning losses, people who were injured. And I just wanted to bring that up, mention that, and put that at the forefront of people's minds. And, you know, that, you know, this is a – if we strive day in and day out, we can make this world a better place. And it really is a simple thing to do, and it's a simple thing that can be accomplished.
Yeah, that's true. And obviously, I applaud the league for what they're doing this weekend. Marking their support with the ORL stickers on the back of the helmets. The Predators are going to be wearing the hashtag Orlando Pride. I think it's Orlando Pride on the back of their jerseys this weekend. So a bunch of stuff's going to be happening across the league, and they're also have partnered with all the other pro sports teams in the Orlando area to make it aware and show their support for this horrible tragedy that occurred, which I didn't, you know, for those of you who don't know, I was in Orlando / Tampa Bay this past weekend, and we'll get to a little bit more, and something that I did not know had occurred until it was mentioned by, you know, my former co-host, Adam Markowitz's wife, when I woke up on Sunday. And needless to say, everything that occurred this past weekend in Orlando, and including today, with that poor child over at Disney World, it's just been a very rough couple of days for that area. But there's been support not only in the United States, but internationally.
Yes. Yes, there has been.
From Montreal to Toronto, Vancouver, Paris, you name it.
To Sydney, Australia, to Paris.
Yeah, you name it. They have shown support. And it's something amazing to see. You know, it's hard to believe that you have to see so much solidarity with a tragedy. Why can't we all get together when there is no tragedy?
Yeah, and not to take away from, you know, the show and what we're talking about, but mm-hmm. it really does come down to some simple things and just some simple decisions people can make in their lives just to start off by being nice, being peaceful, show love and compassion for your fellow human beings. And, that solves a lot and that helps a lot. It's a very simple step to take, and it's one that I think day in, day out, people forget about.
Yeah, it's true. And again, our hearts go out to everybody, and if you want to donate, you can. I know the lineups were like crazy for giving blood. And just, you know, if you have a loved one in your life or if you have a very good friend, take each day for what it is. Make every minute special, because you never know when you are going to, you may never see them again. And I think it might be fitting, Jim, to before we finish the show, you know, let's just give a quick moment, a quick pause of about 10 seconds for everybody, and then we'll continue with the show. Well, for the first time, as some people you may know, I did head down to Tampa for the very first time. Got to check out the Amalie Arena. Very nice place. You know, besides, got to meet you too for the very first time.
Yes, sir.
It was, I don't know what it is about me meeting my co-host, talking to them for so many years, or talking to somebody, knowing them on the boards and stuff like that. And it was, how long had we been chatting and didn't technically officially meet until last weekend?
Maybe 10 years.
Yeah, something like that. So it's
maybe the oddest friendship I have or had.
something about us Canadians. I don't know what it is, but Amalie Arena, very nice arena. Didn't get lost in the bowels. Was able to get down and do the post game stuff, and I was able to pick up some memorabilia, some swag that I wanted, and you helped me with that. And that freight elevator rocks, man. That's all I can say. Staff was very helpful. I liked Media Row, actually, by the way. That was quite nice.
Thank you very much. Work hard to keep that tip top.
Yep. You were there. I got to meet Connor, who is our beat writer for Arena Fan, the executive vice president of the Arena Football League. Tom Goodhines was there. I got to chat up with Tom while I was there too. And but you know, luckily was there for some history. Don't get to see many games a year. It's usually only the Arena Bowl, but luckily I was able to choose a game in which we're able to see history. Even though, as Adam pointed out, as we were driving back from Tampa to Orlando, it was a better game in Orlando, but we got to see history. As I said, we got to see history in Tampa. So
there's something to be said for that.
Yo, yeah, for sure.
And even better yet, history was put on pause on back-to-back plays due to the play calling. At that point in the game in the second quarter, T.T. Tolliver was 5 yards short, and there was a pitch play ruled correctly. A run play, the pitch went backwards, and he got 5 yards on the play. So it put everybody in pause to see what happens, what the effect would be. And then it was much ado about nothing because the very next play was the touchdown catch.
Exactly. And it was good. I mean, I think the Storm did it right. They had a nice video for him to announce, you know, where he was and where he got in Arena Football League history. The only thing that I thought was missing was to actually have a congratulations from Damian Harrell. You know, we did reach out to him before we started the show this week. We have not heard back from him. We just wanted to hear what he thought about it. And being that TT is very possibly going to be breaking another one of his records come this weekend. But if we do happen to get anything while we are taping the show, stay tuned and we'll make sure we give you his statement. But there were other games this week. We'll go ahead and talk about them, and we will get back to the Tampa Bay game. Philadelphia and LA this past week, Jim, they were playing at the Sun National Bank Center in the de facto Philadelphia Soul home game. The final score was switch your numbers around night. Final score was 73-37. I expected more from the LA Kiss considering how well they've been playing, but it just seems that the Soul was there.
And all cylinders. Yeah, they were running all cylinders defensively and offensively. Dan Radabaugh, round of applause for him. He had a phenomenal week. That's the game you want out of your quarterback right there. 20 of 23, 261 yards, 6 touchdowns. They had 2 on the ground with Jeremy Richardson, and Luke Collis came in and mop-up duty, and he tossed one as well for good measure. Mm-hmm. Offensively, they were just clicking and moving. You don't see a much better performance than that only 39 offensive plays, and they put up 73 points. You see something like that, that's when you know an offense is clicking. When they start averaging in that 2 point per game area, they're moving the ball. And defensively, you know, they more than held their own against LA. Not that LA has the best a great offense right now, but they only forced one turnover, but they forced a bunch of fourth downs, and they had a bunch of turnover on downs during the game. And they just did a really good job of holding that offense in check and frustrating, you know, a young quarterback in Pete Thomas. Mm-hmm. And that's the type of game, if you're head coach Dozell, you expect this not just out of your offense, but your defense. They're clicking and showing why they deserve or want to be that one seed.
Yes, yes. And it's a little bit of the game that I saw. I mean, they drew about, give or take, about, I think about 60% officially from what they're told that they hold there over the arena in Trenton. Yeah, it was really a no-brainer. It really, really was a no-brainer. Philadelphia, just as you said, was going on all cylinders and seemed like nothing could go wrong. But you know, it's not that the LA Kiss quarterback did bad. You know, Pete Thomas, he was 22 of 40, 259, 5 TDs, you know, and interception, you know,
and a safety.
Oh, and that's right, and the safety, that's right. But you know, they just couldn't get anything going, and that's I think it just shows. I mean, the obviously the Soul were superior. They scored 29 points in the second quarter alone. That basically called it right there. So, we're talking about history in the making. One of two games that had historical significance on this past weekend. I think it was really an afterthought. Just looking at the game itself, you know, T.T. Tolliver was able to break Damon Harrell's all-time record for receiving yards in a career. He's very short. He's very close to breaking the record for receptions in a career, and that most likely will occur this week. But you're talking about teams that seem to be clicking very well. I think we were talking about a quarterback on the Storm sideline who really was not playing very well at all.
No, it the big stat of this game is three turnovers, two interceptions, and a fumble return. All three went for touchdowns. Mm-hmm. The Jacksonville defense put three scores on the board. That's hard to overcome, and it really started early in the game when Jason Boltis hit a wide open Julius Gregory, and the ball just bounced off his chest, and it seemed like the ball bounced 40 yards off his chest into the hands of a rookie nose guard, Miller, for Jacksonville, and he catches the ball, takes it to the house.
He rumbled, rumble.
First game, first start, gets a touchdown. And from there, for Jacksonville, from there it was all, you know, high fives and smiles. It was all downhill from there with the Storm offense. They just sputtered and stalled and could not get going and couldn't get out of their own way. And there were points in the game where the Storm defense did enough to kind of keep an opportunity available, but the way the offense was going, it for the Storm, it just wasn't going to happen. And then eventually, you know, when your defense is on the field that much, they just start to wear down and not much they can do. I mean, they had two turnover and downs forced against Jacksonville. So, you know, it wasn't as if the defense completely let down. But overall, just a poor performance from the Tampa Bay Storm that night. And the Jacksonville Sharks were opportunistic and took advantage of those opportunities. You know, I don't think all the extra points were made on those defensive touchdowns, but still, three scores, and you take away your opportunity to score, even if it's at a 50% clip, you're going to have a lopsided finish like this was, 67-34.
Yeah, Wolf missed two of the extra points. They did not do the last one at the end of the game when Reed had that 48-yard fumble return for a touchdown. It wasn't attempted just based on the score. You know, it's sort of, you know, with the way that the game went, I kind of felt bad for TT. He is, you know, if you listen to the post game interview that we had with him that was done at the end of the game, if you go over to SoundCloud and you listen to it, you can hear that he is one hell of a team player. He understands that yes, there are records are meant to be broken. Obviously, I'm sure he would rather have had the win. So it a little bit of not necessarily not sour grapes, but sort of put the, you know, the loss put a damper.
How about a salty taste?
Yeah. So you know, bitter rather.
Bitter taste. Yeah, they interviewed him at halftime, and it was the same thing. At halftime, the deficit was a decent chunk as well.
Yeah, it was 30, same as that when the game ended, 33 points.
Yeah. So you know, and they were talking to him about that, and you could read it on his face and see it on his face. At that moment, he didn't much care about the record. It was more about the scoreboard and where everything sat at that time.
Yeah, it's just been a very tough year, obviously for Tampa. And I mean, congrats to him. You know, able to see history, but I'm sure, like when you set a historical record, you want to be able to have the win itself. Sort of reminds me of what Peyton Manning didn't do when he set the record this past year. He had a horrible game, but yet he threw for like 5 yards or 10 yards or whatever it was, and he still set the record.
Yeah,
it's sort of like okay. Then the other game of the week, which also is historical in itself, is the Orlando Predators facing the Cleveland Gladiators. And we've been saying this all year, you know, this Predators team is very, very similar to the Cleveland franchise that had so many tough wins and tight wins when they made their infamous 17-1 run. They just, you know, it's not really the way to end a game. I mean, but they are able to pull out a squeaker and, you know, Lewis kicks a field goal with 23-yard field goal at that with 2 seconds left, and they're able to pull out a win and basically tie Philadelphia with the same record.
Yeah, I mean, cardiac kids again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in 2014, the Cleveland Gladiators won some games in spectacular fashion.
I think it was from six, if I remember.
Touchdowns off the net, interceptions, you name it. And I said this earlier in the year, I think it was week 3 or 4. It kind of reminded me of the 1997 Tennessee Volunteers that won the national championship.
Just right.
Kind of plodding through their schedule. Bottom line is they're finding ways to win games and they're persevering at the end. And you can't knock them for that. That's phenomenal. What I found interesting, and I didn't get to watch the game, because by the time I came home, it was over. They rushed the ball 14 times. So I haven't had a chance to go back and look at ESPN3 to see how it goes, how the game went. But I find that's an interesting little tidbit there. I don't know if that was Cleveland putting pressure on Randy Hippert and the game plan was if you see a lane, go take some yards and don't take the big hit. Or, you know, we're going to try and slow down their pass rush and run. But that to me, that's a significant number of rushes in a game for an AFL team at this juncture in the league.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just because of those rushing alone, I mean, they had 4 rushing touchdowns. Usually if you see 4 rushing touchdowns, you think of Jacksonville and Derek Ross or maybe Arizona. You know, the other significant point to this, and it's something we have to correct because we were totally had our minds on something else, but Quentin Smith in the fourth, I think it was in the fourth quarter. Sorry, Quentin Sims in the fourth quarter scored what it was the league's 300,000th point in league history. We don't want to correct ourselves. I think last week that we did say that it was we said 3 million points last week, and when we were talking last week.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was me or you, but prior to getting on and doing the show, we had talked about where the current CBA talks were and the number being thrown around.
Yeah,
and I couldn't remember if I said it but if I did, I'm assuming that's where it came from.
I think so too. but you know, he became, you know, he joined the record books. And do you want a breakdown of all the records, by the way, that happened this past week? Head over to arenafan.com. You will be able to see everything that was put there by Adam. He was able to go over the breakdown of the 100,000th, the 200,000th, and then what summarily became the 300,000th point in league history. And then obviously everything with T.T. Tolliver. It's just interesting to see how all these records are set. I don't even know if it was announced in Orlando, because we weren't able to watch the broadcast ourselves. Same thing as you're mentioning too, about not being able to see the ESPN3 feed. But I'm curious to know if an announcement, or if they even knew that it was actually mentioned, that was the 300,000 point. Now, to be fair, I don't think you would want to announce it, because it was on a Cleveland touchdown. I'm sure they would have announced it if it was on an Orlando, you know, touchdown, or however much have been, whatever it could have been. But again, I've not been to many places to many arena games where there has been history set. And
I can tell you that not every home team is accommodating when it comes to scenarios or situations like that. Mm-hmm. If it were me and I had a say in it, we would have had our public announcer say something at that time, and I would have been ready with a note to hand to him to let people know. But it would be, that's what we would have done to recognize it in bowl and arena.
Right.
For the visiting team, I don't think they would have had something prepared to go. When Lawrence Samuels caught his number 1,000th reception, I asked and asked and asked if something could be done. And the home team at that time said, no, we won't accommodate anything. And not only that, prior to that, when he surpassed Barry Wagner to become the all-time leading receiver in AFL history at that time, once again we were on the road, and I made the same request and was denied. And in that instance, the commissioner was even there, and I went and made my request personally to him, and he just shrugged and said it's up to the home team.
You know what? It's funny. I actually kind of get that.
I do, too. I didn't – but – to have your public address announcer say, now there's been 3,000 or 300,000 points scored in arena football history after that touchdown, or that touchdown catch. I totally get where you're coming from and understand it, but I still think there's a,
they could have done a different way. They could have done a different way too. If you think about it,
I think it
could have been
class of the organization.
Yeah. It could have been something like this. It could have been, ladies and gentlemen, just as a note to you, the fans, that in the fourth quarter, we have surpassed 300,000 points in league history. That type of
thing. Yeah, exactly. That's a classy thing to do. But the bottom line is, even at the basic level of you saying, yeah, I understand that, that's how it is. That's reality. It doesn't always happen, and it won't always happen. And so, unless one of the Orlando Predator fans is listening and they were at the game and they can tell us, please let us know. That'd be great to know.
Yep. Last game of the week was Portland and Arizona. It was a barn burner in the first half. the 48-31 score at halftime in favor of Arizona really was not an indication of how good of a first half it was. Just in the second quarter alone, it was 58 points scored between the two teams. But, you know,
Arizona, that's insane.
Yeah, Arizona scored when they needed to. It was a very there were four this is normal arena ball. This is when you bring out the onside kicks and whatnot. There were four touchdowns in the last 51 seconds, or in the last minute of the first half.
Actually, you know, 108, Arizona scores. They onside kick. Portland scores at 51 seconds. Then Arizona scores at 45 seconds. Portland at 38 seconds. And then Arizona at 7 seconds.
Right.
And not a single one of those was a return either. Pass, 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 pass.
And unfortunately, what did it in for them, which seems to be really the case this year for the Portland Steel, they go scoreless in the fourth quarter, scoreless in the third quarter, outscored 14-0, and I think summarily that was the game right there.
Yes, yeah, no doubt about that.
I mean, it's not bad. I mean, Shane Austin, I think, had his second best game for the Portland Steel, 350. Well,
no interceptions.
Yeah, 351 yards, 7 touchdowns. So it's, I think it, for Shane Austin, is that his second? Because I remember they were saying earlier this year that he had set a team record for most yards passing. That's second highest. It was in week 7 where he threw for 363 yards. So again, two straight games with no interceptions. He's 1-1 in those two games. But, this is Arizona. I'm not surprised that they won this game. So it is what it is. So it's,
it basically boils down to the offensive struggles Portland has going 0-for-4 on fourth down. No turnovers, no fumbles, and they did a respectable job, at least Shane Austin getting rid of the ball. Didn't give up any sacks, hardly any quarterback hurries. Mm-hmm. So it seems defense is still a struggle for Arizona unless they're playing an offense that sputters. Offensively, Arizona is a juggernaut. They had the same type of game that Philadelphia Soul had this week against the LA Kiss.
Also, this shows Portland. Arizona's defense was being prone to having yards put up against them, but just not points. I mean, passing yards alone were 351 yards for Portland. Nick Davila had it's funny to say a mediocre game at 270 yards and 8 touchdowns, but Portland was able to bring it in. Jared Perry was one of the main guys. Tom Gilson, again, monster game for the guy. Had some amazing touchdown catches, but you know, just the combination of everything. And Michael Benson, the 2 touchdowns, Mo Purify again, Rod Windsor, it was bound to happen again. So it's, aren't we going to have a possible matchup of the one win teams later on this year?
yeah. And we also have a nice matchup to talk about later. When we look at, LA, my apologies, Arizona and Philly.
Yes. And
yes, good point. There is a legitimate opportunity that we missed the O for the egg bowl. We may get the flying one bowls.
Well, it could be the FU bowl, because you know, just raise the middle finger. Some very interesting thing that came across, as everybody knows, or should, if you don't, you do now. The CFL is in the midst of their training camp, and some interesting names have come over the wire of who has been released and who has been recently activated again by teams in the Arena Football League. Two of the big names specifically, Caesar Rayford, was actually released just the other day. I think it was yesterday, by the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And just today, I think it was just today, that former Storm quarterback, former
LA Kiss quarterback.
Yeah, LA Kiss quarterback, Wranglers quarterback. Adrian McPherson was released by the Toronto Argonauts. Cesar Rayford was taken off of Olex, but was put onto RTR. What is your thought on this, Jim? What do you – and there are some others there. We did a quick look to see who may be being released, and the big releases is coming up after this weekend's game, so we may see a lot more of these players come back that may have gone up to the CFL. Any chance you think of Cesar Rayford playing again for the LA Kiss? I mean, and I think Adrian McPherson may be a little bit more tough than Cesar Rayford, though, when it comes to playing for a team again this year.
You know, it's hard to tell. It depends on where their heart is and what their expectation is. I know in the NFL and even in the AFL, they will cut some of these guys in the first cuts to give them a chance to grab on or catch on with another team. You would be able to speak more to that as far as the CFL is concerned, and whether a Cesar Rayford has an opportunity to sit and wait a little bit and see if he can catch on with someone else. I don't know if that was the same opportunity or type of opportunity that might have been afforded to like a Adrian McPherson or some of the other guys. It's hard to tell. I do know if I'm the LA Kiss, what I do is I take them off OLEX and I put them on RTR.
Right. Which is what happened to Cesar Rayford today.
Yeah. And that buys me a little time to talk to that person and see where their head is at, what it is they want to do, what direction they want to go. Do they want to wait a week or two and see what other opportunities present themselves? And then you just kind of go from there and see how it plays out. It's hard to speculate unless someone actually personally knows these individuals very well.
Right.
And they open up to them and say, hey, this is what I'm thinking. I have no idea. None whatsoever.
Yeah. I don't know either. I think, as I said, I think maybe Cesar Rayford for sure. Adrian McPherson, I really don't – I think he's going to try to catch on again with another CFL team. It's very possible that his CFL career is over. I don't know. He may have been a quarterback if he wanted to. That could – and we'll talk about this a little bit more. That could have been if he put – you know, he may have not put himself into it, into the list, but he could have been a quarterback to play in the China League that just had their draft this past Friday. But we'll talk about that a little bit more. But I guess it's just a matter of, you know, if they are cut, the big cuts coming up this week for the CFL after the games this next weekend, a lot of them may not necessarily, it may be a little misleading because a lot of them could end up on the practice rosters throughout the league. So they'll still have a shot of playing or at least staying in the CFL and a possible chance of coming back up to the big team, but or playing, you know, first or second stringers. But
Yeah, that's a possibility for all the teams in the league right now. They all have players on OLEX and that are in Canada, and you know they're keeping tabs on the players and seeing how you feeling, what right. do you think, and you could see the landscape change for several teams in the Arena Football League over the next couple weeks with the addition of some new players. I mean, you can't tell me Cesar Rayford can't go and help the LA Kiss right now.
I know.
You know, so it's if it happens, we don't know, but there could be players that come in the next couple weeks that can change the look and feel of a team immediately.
Another one of those, which wasn't included in, we mentioned it last. We mentioned it actually. I don't think I mentioned it last week. Is Brian Burkowski was. Is back off of OLX. Actually, was signed. Was he? Well, I can't remember what he was on, but he's back.
Activated.
He's back with the Cleveland Gladiators. He wasn't played last week for an undisclosed upper body injury, I think. And I happened to speak with him via Twitter, and it looks like he should be ready to go and maybe activated for the game this week. So he'll be back, and I know that he is one hell of a player. Whether it be CFL or AFL, but yeah, But we'll see. As I said, a lot more to come. Many more people will be joining their AFL teams once the final cuts in the CFL are made.
You know what? While we were talking some transaction talk there, we talked last week about the new rule on reactivating players from injury reserve.
Right.
And we're starting to see some players pop up, like Bo Bell in Philadelphia as one. And I am assuming we're going to start to see some in Arizona pop up as well.
Yeah.
So that's something else for the fans to kind of keep an eye on and see how these changes can impact teams as they get into the second tail half of the season.
Yeah, you don't know. That's a very good point. We'll see with the new expansion on the rules for injured reserve. The rosters will look a little bit different and. It should be pretty cool. We'll see what happens. I said the stretch run to the playoffs, it should be very interesting to see which names do come off. So, now I know we mentioned it a little bit before. There is, as everybody knows, there was the draft for this past week for the CAFL was held on Fridays, and looks like they had. From what I'm hearing, they had a lot of people from across the world tune in to the draft, not just in North America, but there was some in China, Europe, some in Australia, et cetera, et cetera. It seemed to draw very well. What I thought was interesting, though, and what we wanted to talk about was some of these players that were drafted. The first ever AFL player that was drafted for the in the draft itself was Joe Hills. He was picked up by the hold on, I will find it. Dan Lien, the Dragon Kings.
Yep, he was the second overall pick in the draft.
Yes, yeah, he was second overall. Yep, Shane Austin, by the way. He was actually picked after him, and he's going to be under center for the Shanghai Skywalkers. There are a few there. There are quite a few players. I mean, to give you an example, for Beijing, Chris Deeker, Luke Collins, Guangzhou Power, JJ Ratterink, Alex Carter. These are all names I'm sure that we all recognize. Let's see. Any of the others... For Qingdan, the Clipper, Brian Randall, there's a name that we know. But a lot of these players were picked up. And by the way, just as we were talking, what I did not know is that there was a free agent draft. And it looks like Sean Brackett, we know the name, don't we? He also was picked up by Qingdan to be under center. And so it's, should be interesting. A lot of there are some names here that some quarterbacks that I don't know anything about because they may not have been from the Arena League. But I think one of the big questions that's come up, and Richard Obert today, Jim, mentioned it in his story over at Arizona. Was it azsports.com or something? I think something like that. The specifics about how these players can join and play. I mean, there was a list of about 500 players that were on this draft list that registered to play.
But yeah, Obert did a good job of kind of breaking down some basic nuts and bolts for the fans to get a nice understanding. It's at azcentral.com.
Yeah, sorry, azcentral.com. That's right. But as I said, there are multiple players there. Teddy Jennings was picked up. Many, I'm trying to find the other ones here. I mean,
Reggie Gray won in the eighth round.
Yeah. I know. That to me, that's very strange.
If you want, I can kind of go team by team.
Yeah, SK was picked up. Mike Washington was picked up.
That give you names.
Yeah, that's for Shanghai. Christian Wise was picked up for Shanghai. For Shenzhen, it was Terrence Smith, Tristan Purifoy. Just to name a few, for King Don, again, the Clipper, Tanner Varner was picked up, Joe Phinisee, Rayshon Kaiser. I think, though, we'll have to see how this goes because, you know, there are some national players that are also playing for these teams. It should be interesting to see what their camp is like, see how many of these players actually do go over and attend camp. Because as you and I were just talking about, the big thing that Richard brought up had to do specifically with, I guess, eligibility. Because there was a rule or there was something set in place, I think, by the players?
In order to be eligible to play in the CAFL this season, at the end of this season, you had to be an AFL free agent.
Right. Right. And it just so happens that we had somebody just was cut and then re-signed to a one-year contract. I'm sure some of you are saying, well, wait a minute. Joe Hills is not going to be a free agent. Well, actually, he is. He is on a one-year contract, a one-year veteran contract currently with the Jacksonville Sharks. So it's – what do you think? And you and I both do not know what is going to happen. Is it a matter of them being of them going to play anyways? Will the PU step in? Will the league step in? I mean, this is all just basic guessing here that you and I are doing when it comes to this, because you want the integrity of the contracts in the AFL to stay just as is. You don't want to basically say, well, I've signed a 3-year contract. There are certain rules set in place. I really don't care, because Olex in this situation does not apply. It only applies for the CFL and the NFL.
So if you were under contract for next AFL season,
yes,
and at the end of this AFL season, you go to China, you are in violation of your contract.
And if you get hurt,
you're out to dry, depending on what measures are taken by the CAFL.
Correct.
In that vein, I would assume Mr. Ivan Soto in the AFLPU is trying, I won't say is, they're trying they're to make inroads and take steps to protect the players.
And which to me, doing that in China seems just a little bit hard to do because
the rules are totally
different.
Not only that, I mean, talk about just a headache for competent attorneys. The conflict of laws, international law, different labor laws, union laws, employment laws, the differences between the countries. It's there's a lot to do there.
I know there are some of the big conglomerates. I think Apple's one of them. There are unions in China. There are. But as you said, things are just a touch different over there than they are here in the Western world.
Yeah, and it takes much due diligence on the part of the people involved in the CAFL from the United States side and the Chinese side to make sure that they have protocols set in place to anticipate as many scenarios as possible. And, you know, at this point, I don't know what they are. It's difficult to get some information to find out. Nobody knew who the available list of players was, and as far as the draft is concerned, and I don't know why you take that approach. I would think you'd want to have bios built up and try and blow it out the water, like who these people are, and particularly in the U.S. market, enlighten some of the U.S. fans on who the Chinese national players are.
Which I think they tried to do. I did watch a little bit of the draft when I could when I landed in Orlando on a Friday night.
If you do it beforehand, you have a rooting interest in the draft.
Right, yeah.
That's my point from a PR perspective. That's what makes the NFL draft.
Well, you would hope – Yeah, you would hope that they would draw up a draft prospectus, but I don't think they didn't. As far as I know, there was no prospectus at all available for everybody that had been registered to be eligible for the draft.
And I gotta speculate that there's going to be more players made available. I just don't see how you can carry just 20 per team and start and finish the season that way unless you're going to strictly – now, see, we don't know what the agreement is either. It's hard to speculate because we don't know what the agreement is between the league and China itself because they're working through one of the Chinese sports federations. Yeah. So there's a lot of information that we, the fans, don't know, and we probably won't know until that time comes and they deem it appropriate to explain why something occurred.
I would assume that the league has nothing to do with what is currently going on in China.
I don't mean the Arena Football League.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I mean when I say the league, CAFL. Oh,
okay, I just wanted to make sure.
Marty Judge.
Because the way that it came off.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Is they have some type of agreement, but it's with the government. It's with the state. It's with their sports federation, and we don't know what all those details entail. And until we probably won't until they deem something necessary to explain. We won't know how things are going to occur and how they fill in injuries and roster updates. And you can't go to camp with 20 guys. I'm telling you that right now.
No. I mean, I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, you have to remember that it is only going to be a 6-game series, five regular season games, and then playoffs. The playoffs, I don't want to call it a tournament because that's not what it is, the playoffs. So basically, as if you're playing for gold, silver, and bronze.
Oh, you know what? It's like NIT. You play for first place, third place, and fifth place.
Oh, I didn't know they did that in the NIT. I didn't know that. Okay. I did not know that. I know they do.
That tournament play would be an apt description in this scenario.
Oh, well, I don't.
You know they're calling it playoffs. I understand that. I appreciate it. But this is no different than round-robin play in the Olympics, and then you have teams seeded, and you get a first place and a second place in game one, a third and a fourth in game two, and a fifth and a sixth in game three.
Right.
That's tournament play.
Okay. To be fair, okay. But usually, as we know, it's usually not done that way. It's usually 1-4, 2-3, et cetera, et cetera. So it's – but yeah, I get it. But stay tuned. If you want to watch the draft, if you happen to miss any of it or didn't see it at all, you can head over to CAFLfootball.com. I think it is still available at CAFLdraft.com. And you can watch, if you're a big fan of drafts, watching drafts, go ahead. It's there. It's available for you.
At the very least, they have the full rosters there, and you can see what the current 43 AFL players that were taken and what team they're playing for and what position they were taken in.
Yeah. So you can watch it then. Think of anything else that we can talk about before we head to this week's games? I don't think that –
I think previewing this week is on the table.
Okay. First, before we do get to the preview, just want to remind everybody that we are on social media. You know where they are. We just want to remind you anyways. We are on Twitter. We are on Facebook. We are on Instagram. We are on Periscope. We are on Meerkat. We are on – I think I said Facebook. I forget any of them. We are on SoundCloud. That's where all of the archives for AFL Tonight are currently available for the 2016 season. Plus, you can head over to iTunes you can do both. Listen to one episode on iTunes and then come over to Google Play Music and listen to another episode. We don't care. Get your fix. There's multiple places where you can do so. You do want to contact us. You can contact me at tim.capper@arenafan.com. And if it happens to be toward to Jim, I'll make sure that he gets the information that you send to me. Well, we go from a all Saturday broadcasters, like really, really old school type of stuff. We do have a breakup of a Friday and Saturday. That's basically arena football to me. Jim, we have the return of ESPN2, the national broadcast that actually is going to be the Philadelphia Soul and Arizona Rattlers. Yep. 10 o'clock, ESPN2. This is a return game from May 14th in another great game, 65-58 win by Philadelphia. At that point, I can't remember. total loss of thought there.
I knew where you were headed with this, yeah, I would be able to help you out, but I'm not quite sure I know where you were headed with this.
Yeah, I don't remember either. Oh, well, it was Philadelphia's first ever win over Arizona. That's what it was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so going into this game is going to be in the Snake Pit. They seem to be drawing like amazing crowds. I think they drew 14,000 this past week. I think they drew close to 14,000 in their last home game also. This is a big game because not only could Arizona make a dent in possible home field advantage, not only for them, but for Orlando too if there is a Philadelphia loss. This is going to be an amazing game.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the whole slate of games this weekend. Actually, I think there are a lot of fun matchups and fun storylines amongst each of the matchups. Mm-hmm. Very, very, excited about that. This game is, interesting in that right now, the way Philadelphia played last week against LA Kiss, they look like they're motoring. And Arizona had some hiccups after getting off to a really hot start. And I think some of their problems have been kind of tweaked on the offensive side of the ball, and they've got some things going. Defensively, they just had so many injuries on that side of the ball. I think they've had some trouble finding some consistency. I think from the get-go, Coach Guy wasn't happy about the play of his defensive backs, and you've seen guys up and down and in and out throughout the season. This is going to be a fun game. Dozell does a tremendous job of understanding what defenses are trying to do against his offense. And Coach Guy is he really reminds me of Tim Markham and his gamesmanship and what his play calling. This is going to be a fun game to watch. I like Arizona to prevail in this one in a tight game. And I don't think this is going to be a super high scoring game either. Not to say they're each going to be in the 40s. I would say more a 58-56 type game.
Massey has this game at, which I'm very not surprised, they have it at a 1.5 point spread for Arizona. I would just probably say that would be just based on being at home. Okay. Over under of 119.5. Five Dimes, on the other hand, they have it at a -3 for Arizona, but also sitting at a 119.5. This is an interesting game. Philadelphia finally got off the snide when it came to beating Arizona.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this and I think it needs to be another perfect game by Dan Radabaugh.
Yeah.
Take advantage of that banged up defense.
Yeah, they can't come out slow. If they come out slow, Arizona's going to pounce. They need to come out humming. And if they come out humming, they have the ability to keep chugging along.
Yeah. I think just de facto, I'm going to give Arizona a 3-point win in this just because they are at home and that they're the previous history. But I could be completely wrong about this, but Philadelphia may blow the doors off of them. But Remember the last game, it really wasn't the score was not indicative of what the game actually was. Philadelphia really dominated the last game between these two teams. So
yeah, that's correct. That,
it'll be interesting to see what actually happens. Again, the game's on ESPN2. It's a return to the ESPN2 action. Do not forget to watch it. You know, there are multiple ways to do so. The second national game of the week, Saturday, Orlando coming off that win versus the Cleveland Gladiators, play the Jacksonville Sharks as they travel to Jacksonville. Game is the CBS Network game of the week.
Another great game, mm-hmm. Another fun matchup.
Mm-hmm. Jacksonville won the last. So far, these two teams have split this year, and they've been very close games both ways. Orlando beat them in April. Just recently in late May, Jacksonville knocked them off by 3 points. I really don't know how to call this game either, because sure, the game is in Jacksonville. This old-time Southern Division matchup, it really doesn't matter. It's just a matter, I guess, which team's going to be on the most. I mean, it's... I see this game being a very close game too, maybe 3 or 4 points also, a last second win. Which team? I'm stuck at a pick'em right now, to be honest with you.
All right. Well, I still think Jacksonville has the more talented team.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Orlando fans gasped when I call the Predators the cardiac kids. I like Orlando in this game.
Okay.
Once again, I think this will be a close game, probably very similar in score to the Philadelphia-Arizona game, like a 57-54 type game, a 59-56 type game.
Okay.
But I like Orlando to prevail on this one, barring, you know, any news or injuries coming out between now and then that, you know, impact – game planning and performance for key players.
Right. Massey has the game at a Jacksonville favor by 2.5 points of an over-under of 111.5. Five Dimes currently has the game at Jacksonville at 2.5 points. Also,
I'll tell you the key playmaker in this game for me,
yeah,
is Greg Reed with the Jacksonville Sharks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If he's able to create havoc with Greg Carr and slow him down or get his hand on some balls, he'll have a significant impact on this game. Outside of that, I just – the way Orlando finds ways to win, and I know Jacksonville won dominatingly, if I can make that word up.
Sure, why not? If Donald Trump can make a point, why not you?
Yeah, why not? They have a will and a desire, and they finish games. We haven't seen Jacksonville really finish games this year. When they've been up, yeah, sure, but we see them fold and go home early. And that's why I pick Orlando, and it'll be like a 57-55, 59-56 type game.
We need to remember the last time that these two teams met, Jim. A certain wide receiver dressed in Sharks red exploded for 8 touchdowns.
Yeah, I got to think that our head coach over there in Orlando remembers that and knows that, being a former defensive back himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to have some type of game plan or approach for that. The last game Jacksonville won, Sonny, he's been playing at a very high level this year, all arena level. And he's not a physical match against Joe Hills. And there was a difficulty there. And that's not to say that something can't be done to scheme-wise and make it more difficult. If they do that, the hard thing is you have the ever-steady and persistent I just drew a blank. Tiger Jones.
Yeah, Tiger Jones.
And then big play Reggie Gray.
Yeah. Oh yeah. See that's an addition compared to this last time that these two teams met. So.
Yeah. So, but what, we got to see how that all works out and how the passes get spread around and how Tommy Grady handles that, and can Orlando keep enough consistent pressure on him. We haven't seen that a lot throughout the season, consistent pressure from that front four in Orlando. What they've garnered defensively has a lot to do with the playmakers they have in the defensive backfield. I just find this is going to be an interesting and fun game to watch. And I think that Joe Hills can go off and Orlando can still win this game.
We also need to remember too that if you've been watching the transactions, at least as of the day that we're taping this, Derek Ross was reactivated from inactive reserve.
So, he had a sprained ankle.
Yeah, so he'll be back. He will be back, so he could be another. And you know what, Randy? Well, I think one of the big things, Randy Hippard, two interceptions the last time. Now, but more that I'm thinking about it, I'm giving a slight edge to Jacksonville. So I think you and I are going to. Disagree on this one this week.
All right.
Ding, 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 ding. next game of the week, another home game for Tampa. As I said, this is, I think, one of the few reasons to watch this game, if you do, is to see history again be made in Tampa Bay for the second straight week with T.T. Tolliver. L.A. comes to town to play the Tampa Bay Storm. I know you don't pick Tampa Bay Storm games, but
well, if you don't like offense, this is the game for you.
Yeah. And one good thing for that, listen to this here, folks. And by the way, Adam and I were talking about this on the way back.
Explain a little further when you were driving back to Orlando after last week.
Exactly. Yeah, driving. Yeah, and he goes to me. He goes, he would not be surprised if the over-under on this game is sub 80 or low 80s to sub 80.
It opened sub 80.
And it opened sub 80. Massey had their total at 73.5 points. What? It's changed since then. LA is favored by 7.5 by Massey. Over at 5 dimes, it is 7.5 points, and it's grown. It's up to 87.5 points as the over under for this game.
At covers, it opened at LA chalk 7.5, 79.5 over under, and it's bumped up to 87.5 since then.
Jeez. It's just a matter of who's going to win this game. I mean, Boltus had an absolute horrible game last week. Pete Thomas had a decent game. It's just a matter of.
Well, I think there's some. This is an interesting game in that there's some extenuating transactions occurring throughout the week for both these teams.
Right, right.
And it's hard to sit back and really tell how these transactions are going to impact each team. You know, does LA have a few game changers show up? Maybe, maybe not. Storm.
That's right. Actually, they traded. You know what? They traded players between them. I just noticed that.
Yeah, they made a trade this week. The two teams did. So,
I wouldn't be surprised if by the way, we're talking about Cornelius Dixon. He was traded for a claim order position. This would be one of the main reasons for him to play for Tampa Bay this week.
And he's won arena ball rings each of the last three seasons. So, if I got that right,
yeah.
15 San Jose and the prior two with Arizona. So this is an interesting game. This is remember I talked a couple weeks ago about Omar Smith and what he does with their offense and how he kind of plods it along and tries to stay proficient with it, but enough to keep them in the game.
Yeah,
that kind of plays into the Storm a little bit and allows them to take some time. And I think this game comes down to Jason Boltus. What Jason Boltus do we get? The Jason Boltus of last week or the Jason Boltus that we saw against Arizona?
Yeah.
And a lot of that's going to be determined by the job the Storm offensive line does. If they give him just enough time, Jason can make the plays.
Yeah.
If they don't, they're going to struggle offensively. And fortunately for the Storm defense, this is an offense that they have the ability to hold in check. I don't know who wins this game, but I don't see either team hitting 50.
The last time that these two teams played was back in 2015. It was in Tampa. And it's funny what the opening line was, Jim, is that the final score for that game was 38-34. There's your 72 points. by the way, quarterback for Tampa Bay that day, Jason Bultas. Bultas.
Yeah. It's, you know, they, after last week's Storm game against the Jacksonville Sharks, Lawrence Samuel said he and the coaching staff and front office were going to take a hard look at the film and, yeah, and the players. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see some changes between now and then. And that's why I say if I'm –
they got a day to do it.
Yeah, if I'm the casual observer, this is a hard game to really kind of gauge right now.
Right. I don't know where to go this one. I will say for breaking one record, I will go – let's go with TT.
Yeah, let's give them a win. And
yeah, let's give Tampa – I'll give Tampa Bay the win on this one. Last game of the week, two very underperforming teams, at least as of late. Cleveland Gladiators travel to play the Portland Steel. At least Portland has a nice-looking field. the last time that these two teams played, at least as the Steel, was this past year, back on May 16th. This is a return trip. Cleveland did beat Portland by 7 that week. So we'll depends on where we can go this one and which team, I guess, is going to – they held their own. Cleveland held their own with Orlando. They've been able to hold their own with quite a few teams this year. Is Portland going to be able to overcome just that little more in order to beat them, or is it really a fait accompli and it's going to be Cleveland winning this game?
Let me give you some numbers. 56, 62, 63, 70.
Bingo! I got it. I win.
Those are the points scored by the Cleveland Gladiators the last 4 weeks.
Okay.
Since their overtime victory against the Portland Steel.
That's right. It was overtime. That's right.
Yes. And in that game, if I recall correctly, that was Arvell Nelson's second start. Maybe, maybe not.
Arvell Nelson. Double checking right now.
So the Portland Steel since then, if you they have an anomaly when they play the Tampa Bay Storm.
It was his third.
Okay. They since that game, the Portland Steel have gone 34, 42, 68 against the Tampa Bay Storm. And then 49. Mm-hmm. That's Shane Austin making a difference, starting to get a little better offensively.
Right.
I just don't know if they're consistently good enough throughout the game offensively to beat the Cleveland Gladiators. Earlier when Arvell Nelson got started, I said he was good for two bum drives a game. I didn't actually use the word bum back then. I forget what I said, but it's an apt description where things just went awry and they stalled and they sputtered. He seems to have gotten over that hump. There's still some mistakes and growing pains, but he has acquitted himself well and progressed as an arena football quarterback. Shane Austin has gotten over his turnovers recently. But they still sputter offensively. And Cleveland, for all it's worth, they have a defense that fights. And I'm still not sold on the Steel defense despite their performance against Tampa Bay Storm because of all the turnovers Tampa Bay Storm had that game with fumbles, especially the quarterback center exchange. So I like in this game Cleveland by a touchdown.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm picking Cleveland in this one too. It's it could be close. I think it will be close. I mean,
I think the total might be under 100 though.
Yeah, but as I said, Austin has improved. He has a great two wide receivers that he knows that he can throw to now. Even though, Tyron Gordon is down in this one, but he has Jamar Howard again. I think it will be a Cleveland win, but as you said, I think it will be anywhere between a 7 to 10 point win for the Glads. So, I think that's it. I don't think there's anything else we're going to mention this week.
Do people know we take questions? Can we tell people?
Yeah, guys, we do take questions. You can email me at any time. Let us know on the message boards. Do it on Facebook or whatnot. We'll try to answer them. Don't be shy. Come out of your shell. You know, Dr. Capper is here. You're not getting charged.
That's pretty creepy, man.
Sorry. I apologize to all the children who are listening to the show and are going to be having nightmares tonight when they listen to that.
A superhero you are not.
But I promise, kids. Anyways, so don't forget we have two national games of the week this week. ESPN is back. I'm sure Ari Wolf will be on the call on this one. It's been a few weeks since Ari's done this. And we're going to have, I think, most likely Sed will be on the color commentary for the CBS.
I'll tell you who's on the call.
Do you know already?
Yeah, Philadelphia Soul at Arizona.
Yeah.
Rattlers, yeah. Ari Wolf with Cedric Bonner and Tina.
Oh.
Sideline Tina on the sideline. And then
who's going to be doing CBS Sports Network?
Well, nice of you to ask. That would be Dave Ryan,
okay.
Pat O'Hara, and Cassie McKinney.
Ah, Pat, I never even thought about that because I saw Ced last week. Got to shake his hand and say hey to him before he did the thing. And by the way, a shout out too to Derek Sharp. I got to meet him for the very first time too. He was doing the Tampa Bay play-by-play, and I go in there and I was like, oh, as soon as I did, I was like, oh crap, I hope you guys are not broadcasting. And he goes, no, we're okay, you're good. So it was nice meeting Derek for the first time too. So it should be a good week. Let's hope we have some good games this week. I said, remember, last week it was history worth watching. There is still history worth watching this week, but you happen to have two other good games that are going to be broadcast on national TV. So enjoy the week, and we will see you next week, obviously. So for everybody here at AFL Tonight, for Jim Robinson, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.
Deuces.